From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Thursday, September 2nd.
But I think having a really sizable part of your company that is fully remote is here to stay, in part because you just, if you need to hire more people, they're not all going to live in these big and increasingly expensive cities.
That was Jessica Lesson, founder of The Information, talking with us about remote work and the mass relocation of tech workers that's still playing out. We're going to dig into that in a moment, but first, your morning headlines. We began with COVID as we head into the Labor Day weekend. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky is urging all Americans to reconsider their plans, especially if you're unvaccinated.
Given where we are with disease transmission right now, we would say that people need to take their own these risks into their own consideration as they think about traveling. First and foremost, if you are unvaccinated, we would recommend not traveling.
She went on to say that although vaccinated people could travel, they should wear a mask. The recommendation comes as cases continue to rise across the U.S. with an average of 160,000 a day. Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin, was dissolved on Wednesday following a bankruptcy settlement. The agreement requires the company's owners and members of the Sackler family to pay $4.5 billion to help address the deadly opioid epidemic. As part of the deal, the Sackler family will accept no opioid-related liability. This ensures that the family will remain one of the wealthiest in the country. Judge Drain, who presided over the case, said he had hoped for a higher payout, but had settled for a lesser amount since the Sacklers had parked so much of their wealth in offshore accounts. Next, Afghanistan, where a senior State Department official said the majority of Afghan interpreters and others who'd applied for visas were left behind. The official went on to say that the U.S. still doesn't have reliable data on who was evacuated. Initial reports suggested that most applicants were unable to enter the Kabul airport. And finally, we end just outside of Denver, Colorado, where three police officers and two paramedics were indicted on manslaughter and other charges in the death of Elijah McClain, a black man who was put in a chokehold and injected with a powerful sedative 2 years ago. Elijah's pleading words, captured on police body cam video, inspired widespread attention on social media in the wake of George Floyd. A warning that this audio might be uncomfortable for some people.
My name's Elijah McClain.
Yeah,
that's
bro. All I was, karate.
That's what I was doing. I was just going home. I'm an introvert and I'm different.
Elijah worked as a massage therapist and was described by his family as a gentle introvert. The Aurora police have had several allegations of misconduct against people of color, but the new police chief promises to rebuild public trust. And now to our daily deep dive. When the pandemic forced technology workers in coastal cities on both sides of the U.S. to work from home, many reconsider their options as to where they wanted to live. Now cities in middle America are competing for these workers, and the workers are taking them up on their offers. What does this mean for the tech industry, and how will it change cities? Jessica Lesson, founder of The Information, joins us today to help us make sense of it all. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jessica, what is happening in the tech world post-COVID? Can you explain what this tech exodus trend is?
I guess it's not surprising that tech companies are really on the forefront of remote work because inherently their jobs are more flexible. And also, there's so much competition for talent that employees really have a lot of leverage with companies and are voting that they want some flexibility. And so in a recent information survey of our subscribers, we found that 42% of people who responded said their company had no limit on where they could work. So obviously this is a huge change from pre-COVID and something we'll probably see play out over a long period of time, but a definite push right now for workers wanting more flexibility.
Do you think the tech world is going to pull back and say, you've got to all come back together? We need the creativity. We need you to be back in the building. I mean, how long can you continue living from Wyoming if you want to live in Wyoming?
I think it really comes back to demand for workers. These tech companies, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, startups, they're growing so fast. And really, they were already bursting against, I think, what Silicon Valley and the Bay Area could offer in terms of talent. So you were already seeing hubs across the country, from New York to Austin. There's a lot of attention on Miami. We'll see how that plays out. So I think that there's also just that push and the reality that to grow, these companies are going to really need to hire talent wherever they can find it. And that may continue to make remote work. How it works with hybrid meetings and corporate culture, every company is writing their playbook. Every week, there's a new acronym a startup puts out for, you know, their vision of office-centric, hybrid, this or that. It seems like one grand experiment to me, honestly. But I think at the end of the day, even managers who want that creativity and experience of being together realize they're going to have to be more flexible.
You mentioned San Francisco. When you look at California's tax system, it ranks 49 out of 50 for individual state income tax. You know, it's one of the worst as far as taxing individuals. San Francisco is also one of the most expensive cities in the United States. The average price for a one-bedroom apartment is about $2,500, $2,550. Where are San Francisco tech people moving to?
So the data right now says they're going about an hour or two away. So on average, while there's a lot of attention paid to places like Miami, Austin, Colorado, even a couple years back, Colorado was advertising on the San Francisco BART transportation, which I thought was very funny. There's been great studies looked at like people who've changed their mailing address and they've gone to like Napa or Tahoe. So I think we also don't want to overstate the exodus, if you will, but it's certainly happening. We're starting to see some boomerang exoduses, though. I was talking to a top tech founder recently who had left the Bay Area in part for tax reasons, realized his friends were still in the Bay Area, and he's come back. So I imagine we'll see more of that, too.
You know, you mentioned there are also incentives, by the way. Tucson, Arizona was offering high-skilled workers, tech professionals. If you move, you get $1,500 in cash, employment help for your spouses. Northwest Arkansas was giving 10 grand and a new mountain bike, as well as a museum membership. If you come on over and you start working there, how popular is this trend, you know, incentivizing people to get up and move to another state?
You're definitely seeing it from the states, and you're seeing a lot of talk from mayors about tax breaks and the like. You're also seeing the flip side, though, that companies are adjusting comp to cost of living. Facebook has said that they're doing this. Others have as well. So they've said, you can move to Boulder, but you're going to make less. And I think people are going to still figure out what that actually means. To your point, maybe that's still a win-win because the Bay Area has become so expensive. But that cost of living adjustment is something you're hearing more and more about as well.
You mentioned Miami earlier, that they're trying to become a bigger tech hub. Is there a potential for states like Texas, for instance, to change their tax laws and regulations because you've got this newer demographic of tech workers who want to move in?
Absolutely. I think there's huge potential. And I don't think it's necessarily that bad for the Bay Area and California. I mean, at the extremes, it could be. But the big picture here is this is an industry that is growing so fast. It is sucking up talent and employment at record rates. You know, Amazon has well north of 1 million employees, which I just find totally staggering. And so these companies have to expand into these areas regardless. And I think it is an opportunity for other cities. I don't see them packing up their bags from Silicon Valley either, because the concentration of talent there is real as well. I think of it as more a very broad expansion, but absolutely creates opportunities for other cities to really attract these companies.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned you're seeing really people moving within the state, not leaving the state necessarily. You look at San Francisco's office vacancy rate, though, it's like 20% with the amount of vacant spaces surpassing levels from before the 2008 Great Recession and the dot-com bust. So when you look at San Francisco, did the pandemic make any significant changes? What are the trends you're watching in terms of remote only or flexible work?
It's a great question. You're very much right about downtown San Francisco. We have an information office there, and things are pretty quiet downtown. But you've started to see some companies, I think Twitter, which has a big presence in downtown, bringing people back to work. I think it's early. You know, we were all anticipating fall would be the return to some normalcy. Now with Delta, some hesitation on that. And so I think it's going to be hard to read over the next couple of months what the long-term trends are. the end of the day, I think companies and the startup ecosystem that also populates downtown are going to have some hub. They're going to have some office space. There's a lot of hybrid coming in 3 days a week. So it's hard to tell. It's a good time to get a long-term lease in San Francisco, though, for sure.
If you want to get in now, huh?
Absolutely.
We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Jessica Lesson, founder of The Information, on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. We're here with Jessica Lesson, founder of The Information. When you look at other industries, for instance, finance, what are you seeing there? You know, there were some pretty big hedge funds who announced in the middle of the pandemic, they're leaving New York, they're done with the taxes, they want to move down to Florida where there's no state tax. Are you seeing more trends of people looking to U.S. states that don't have state income taxes?
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, the big banks are back in action in Manhattan and put food trucks in the streets to try and lure people back. The leaders in finance have been more outspoken around wanting people in the office 5 days a week. I see a little bit more return to normalcy there. Tech will lag in part because many tech jobs can be done behind a computer screen. You have a very tech-savvy corporate culture around collaboration. And so we saw Silicon Valley being one of the first industries where the beginning of the pandemic went fully remote right away. And I think it will be one of the last back, whatever kind of back looks like. And again, I just go back to like the volley of announcements between companies announcing their remote work policies has really struck me as a bunch of press releases to lure employees. You know, you saw Twitter say they were going to embrace remote work, and a few days later, Facebook came out with a big plan. And I think these companies are really sending the message, we need talent. And they feel like a robust remote work policy is the new free food, frankly, and they're rushing to embrace it.
So it's not the free bagels they want. They're done with that. It's an opportunity. An opportunity to live somewhere else. You know, more than half of newly remote workers looking to move say that they want cheaper housing. More than a quarter are looking to reduce their living costs by 50%. So as that factors in, is corporate America looking into that, understanding that? Or do they just assume, well, everyone's going to return back to the big cities where our corporations are headquartered?
No, I think you have to take that seriously as a company these days, because you see people voting with regards to that. And another dimension of this is the tech industry still has appalling rates of diversity because some of the talent centers have been so concentrated. So there are a lot of factors pushing the largest tech companies to really explore remote work, not just the lower cost of living that employees have been asking for, but also other factors like being able to tap, you know, a wider array of talent. There are a lot of factors in that dimension. And I think we're in that phase of the process where companies are justifying and rationalizing and planning based on tapping all these benefits. The phase that I think will take much longer to play out is impact to productivity, impact to culture, just the other parts that maybe are impossible to track and it's irrelevant to. But I think personally, I think we underestimate the downsides of not being together as well.
I want to ask you about culture. You know, the fact that so many people are now spread out and able to work from where they want to. Do you think that this will have an effect on American culture, particularly in middle America?
I think ultimately it has to. A 5-day work week has been the backbone of many parts of corporate America. But I think, how is it going to affect our commuting rhythms and our cities and, you know, even how we think about childcare and family life? There's the sort of the 5-day week has arguably shaped every aspect of that. And so, and again, we're talking about a very particular type of worker. And I think for many other jobs, it'll be back to the normal rhythms because it has to be. So I think all things to watch, but it's a little early to tell. And I think we felt that this fall might bring some clarity, but it's looking like maybe not. And we might have to wait a little bit longer.
You know, you mentioned how a lot of the tech industries like to be thought of as ahead of the curve. But as you look to these tech companies, do you see them implementing four-day work weeks? I mean, what are the changes that you think these companies will make that could affect corporate culture?
I think the hybrid few day a week thing is hard. Every company has the 3 day, 2 day, but it's hard to know where that will shake out. But I think having a really sizable part of your company that is fully remote is here to stay, in part because if you need to hire more people, they're not all going to live in these big and increasingly expensive cities. So I think the concept of a hybrid culture where you're in a meeting and not everyone is physically present, I think that's a real change in reality. There are so many flavors of these 3 days or 3 days a week and your manager decides. And I think that's all a grand experiment that will shake out, but no one really knows. And for many companies, that may not be that different. Maybe you weren't touching the office every day. So I think the thing that's probably here to stay is having a very sizable cohort that is fully remote.
So Jessica, as you stand back and see how work is shifting in America and you look at the tech space, what are you watching for in the coming months and year?
This remote work boom is leading and driving an incredible tech boom, one of the many factors, low interest rates being the other one. I'm very interested in how that plays out and how remote work and hybrid work is going to really increase demand for and our dependence on these companies and their tools. I think that's another aspect, perhaps why you're seeing tech companies lead in remote work. Many of their bottom lines benefit from it at the end of the day. The other one is just widening disparities, right, between workers that have a huge amount of flexibility over their schedules and geographies and those who don't. And technology tends to, I believe, over time, lift all boats, but also exacerbate inequalities. And so I think that's something we have to think about as well.
Jessica Lessen, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And now to the look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today. President Biden will visit Louisiana on Friday to assess the damage from Hurricane Ida. The storm hit the state on Sunday, making it one of the five strongest storms to ever hit the U.S. Biden plans to meet with state and local leaders from impacted areas. And just in time for Labor Day relaxation, a new book is out, The Nature of Middle Earth. It's a previously unseen collection of writings by J.R.R. Tolkien. It publishes today. The book is a continued exploration of the worlds first seen in Tolkien's iconic books, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And finally, to Detroit for some cool jazz this weekend. The 42nd annual Detroit Jazz Festival runs Friday to Monday. And the best part, it's all virtual, so everyone can enjoy it. Last year, a million people from across 32 countries watched the iconic concert from home. And organizers hope this year will have an even bigger audience. Musicians from across the globe will be flown in to perform, safely ensconced in a jazz bubble to keep everyone safe. We'll see you back on Tuesday morning. Have a great long Labor Day weekend. Thanks for joining us. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Jessica Lessen for being on the show. And if you liked this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen. Alexis Ramdow and Corey Wara engineered and produced this podcast. Ariella Martin also produced. Fonda Mwangi did the research. And our executive producer is Laura Beatty.